Thank you so much for being here. I would like to begin by acknowledging with respect that the land that we are standing on today is the traditional ancestral homeland of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, Sioux, and Ute nations and peoples. So I gave a talk yesterday called Humanity, Belonging, and Community in the Rathmanis Classroom. And in that talk, I laid out some ideas about things that I have tried to do to make the Rathmanis Classroom more human, more full of community, and where people feel like they belong. Today, I would like to do something different, which is, it's a little bit of an open problem session. So what I would like to do today is talk about several things that I don't know how to do, and that I would like to invite you to help me think about how we can accomplish. The other thing that I have to admit is that you get invited to these things a few months ahead of time when you don't know what you're going to talk about. So this title, I said this title, but let me just change the title. Teaching and learning affects three missions to work towards. Okay? So I'd like to ask you to think about a couple of words that come to mind when you hear it.
$10.
And so I get to go and learn percussion from one of the one of history's top Latin percussionists. Now, I should say that I came to this class knowing nothing about percussion. I always liked percussion, but I had never played an instrument. But you go to his class, and it's people from all walks of life. It's a community center. You have, you know, the missionaries. You have the hipster that just opened into the neighborhood. You have everybody. And you can just go and take a class with the master. There's people who have been taking class with him for 5, 10 years. He's been doing this for 5, 10 years. And there's people that just arrived. And one thing that happens there is that, you know, there's no admissions required. There's no selection of like who's allowed to participate or not. You just show up, you get your instrument, and you start playing. What quickly happens after like a week or two, he actually hired me on my first paid gig at the corner hairstyles. So his friend has a hairstyle salon, and he paid me $5 to play a show with him. And in this show, all I had to do was doom 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 doom. I had to drop doom 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 doom. And I thought, doom 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 doom. And he's just going crazy. He's doing. I shouldn't use the word crazy. That's not the word. He's just an incredible musician. And all of a sudden, I feel like I am an amazing percussionist, but I've been playing percussion for 2 weeks. But the thing is, and he tells me, if you don't keep that dun 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 steady, you're gonna throw me off. And so it's actually extremely important that you stay with me, and you know, we'll start there, and we'll work towards everything else that we're gonna do. Okay. I don't know a lot of mathematical spaces where somebody who is not a math major gets to hang out with a field medalist and do some really cool math together. And I would love for that to happen. So that's my first question. What does it look like? The second thing that I want to talk about is the trees. I've been obsessed with the trees lately. I'm a city kid. I grew up in Bogota. It's a city of 10 million people. Where I was, the countryside was where the war was. We didn't go there. And I really just grew up with no connection with the land. You moved to California. It's a magical place. And so I've been obsessed with the trees. I've been hanging out with the trees a lot, spending a lot of time. And recently I picked up this book called The Hidden Life of Trees. Okay? And this is written by Peter Wolleben, who manages one of the few wild forests that are left in Europe. I didn't realize that in Europe pretty much every forest has been planted. But there's very few that are actually native. And he manages one of them. And so he spends his days hanging out with the trees, studying them, trying to understand them. And I want to read a part of his book. So he writes, students at the Institute for Environmental Research at RWTH Aachen discovered something amazing about photosynthesis in undisturbed beech forests. I didn't know that beech is a kind of tree. I'm not talking about beeches, B-E-E-C-H. Apparently, the trees synchronize their performance so that they are all equally successful. That is not what one would expect. Who one is, we should be thinking of. Apparently, one would not expect the trees to work together. He writes, each beech tree grows in a unique location, and conditions can vary greatly in just a few yards. Each tree experiences different growing conditions. Therefore, each tree is able to grow more quickly or more slowly, and is able to produce more or less sugar or wood. If you've ever talked, this should sound familiar. And that's what makes the research also astounding, he writes. The rate of photosynthesis in this forest is the same for all the trees. The trees, it seems, are equalizing differences between the strong and the weak. This equalization is taking place underground, through the roots. Whoever has an abundance of sugar hands some over. Whoever is running short gets help. Isn't it beautiful?
It is beautiful.
Their well-being depends on their community. And the thing is that when the supposedly feeble trees disappear, the forest is no longer a single closed unit. You might know a tree falls, and all of a sudden the hot sun can come in, the swirling winds can now penetrate the forest, and the forest floor can disrupt the moist, cool climate. Even strong trees get sick a lot over the course of their lives. and this happens, they depend on their weaker neighbors for support. If they're no longer there, then all it takes is what would once have been a harmless insect attack to seal the fate even of giants. I didn't know the trees at all of this. I think this is just really beautiful. And I think when you're a teacher, everything is a metaphor about teaching. And this is such a beautiful metaphor about what a classroom could feel like and what society could be like. Just imagine a classroom of students who truly understand that they're a community, not just a bunch of individuals who understand that we're all interconnected beings. And that if the whole classroom is stronger, the whole society is stronger, then each one of us is going to be stronger. So again, I ask myself, what does this look like in a math classroom? The third vision that I would like to share with you is from one of the people who has inspired me most in my life, Bell Hooks, from her book, Teaching to Transgress. And in this book, Bell Hooks is talking about switching from she grew up during segregation in an all-black school, and then as she was in school, all of a sudden integration came, and she moved from an all-black school to a racially integrated school. And so she writes, "For black folks, teaching, educating, was fundamentally political because it was rooted in anti-racist struggle. Almost all our teachers at Booker T. Washington School were black women. Teachers worked with and for us to ensure that we would fulfill our intellectual destiny, and by so doing, uplift the race. My teachers were on a mission. Attending school then was sheer joy. I loved being a student and I loved learning. School changed utterly with racial integration. Bused to white schools, we soon learned that obedience and not a zealous will to learn was what was expected of us. That shift from beloved all black schools to white schools, where black students were always seen as interlopers, as not really belonging, taught me the difference between education as the practice of freedom and education that merely strives to reinforce domination. I then went to Stanford University as an undergraduate student, and there the primary lesson was reinforced. We were to learn obedience to authority. In these settings, I learned a lot about the kind of teacher that I did not want to become. In graduate school, I wanted to become a critical thinker. Yet that longing was often seen as a threat to authority. Individual white male students who were seen as exceptional were often allowed to chart their intellectual journeys. But the rest of us, and particularly those from marginal groups, were always expected to perform. Now, let me be real for a moment, because I'm Latino, my department gets to say that I'm Latino in the department, but I grew up in Colombia being the majority, and I have to tell you the full story that in Colombia, I was seen as one of these students that was outstanding enough to select my own trajectory. I got to go to MIT as an undergraduate, I got to get my PhD at MIT, and I experienced firsthand that the doors were open for me to choose my own path. And I really benefited from that, and I'm very thankful for that. And so it was a complete shock to me as somebody who grew up in a very sheltered environment in Colombia to all of a sudden go to a public school in California and see how my students' educational experience was just so massively different from what I thought education was. So one thing that I always ask myself is, you know, why do we think that only some people deserve that kind of freedom to choose their own education? So what does a liberatory mathematics classroom actually look like? And this is the third question that I would like to pose to you. So there's something else that I do in my class. So I played that song for my students I do it because our institutional spaces are just so sterile that I think you need some color and some flavor in there. But I decided that I shouldn't be the only one choosing the music, and so I asked my students, will you please just take turns DJing for us? So, you know, every day when we come into class, somebody's going to choose a song and we're going to play it. And I asked them, just choose a song that makes you feel comfortable, that makes you feel joyful, that makes you feel at home, a place where tell us a little bit about the song or why it means something to you. So this is just an exercise that I do. And I was completely floored the first time I did this because I thought, okay, maybe they're going to play some music that I like and I'll learn about some cool music. But as the semester progressed, I noticed, for example, that about a third of the students chose these songs that were very meaningful to them, and they were dedicated to their mother, to their father. And they would say, every moment that I'm in the classroom, I'm remembering all the efforts that my parents made for me to be here because they couldn't be here. And so when I'm in the classroom, I'm always thinking about them. One of the students decided to share the song that she sang at her mother's funeral. And it was actually really astounding to hold space for something like that in my classroom. But she wanted to share it with us. Another student brought her 8-year-old daughter and played her favorite song, which is Summer Over the Rainbow, because she wanted her to experience what it feels like to be in a math classroom and feel like the sky is limit. Another student chose a song called Freedom by Marcel Khalife. And she shared with us, you know, I said, I'm a Palestinian woman, I'm a mother of four, I'm an immigrant to the US, and I never really get to feel free. And the time that I feel the freest is when I'm doing a class. So that's what it means for me to be in this class. And I didn't see this coming at all. I found it extremely deep and powerful, and I think the main lesson that I learned from this is that students really want to be seen. They want to be seen as humans in the classroom. We don't give them the opportunity in the math classroom. And so I think that's something else to try to work towards. So let me close by thanking all the people that have made it possible for me to be up here in front of you. It's really a huge, huge honor to receive this award. Quiero empezar por darle gracias enormes a mi familia, a mi Lee, mi pareja, a mi comunidad en Oakland. Siempre ha sido mi apoyo incondicional y me ha enseñado las lecciones más profundas de mi vida. Awards are often given to individuals, but our work can only be carried out in the community. And I would like to thank especially San Francisco State University and the Comunidad Colombiana Combinatoria. These have been my mathematical homes. And I have to say that not many organizations understand that research, teaching, and service should actually go to them. It works better that way. And I feel really blessed to have found homes like that. I am I'm extremely grateful to my fellow directors at MSRIF, Summer RU program at MSRIF for students of color. They have taught me immensely about what foreigner Latino in the US can do to help and support Black and Brown students in this country. And I've learned enormously from them. In particular, I've learned enormously from Susie Weeks, and I'm super excited to get this award with her. It really means a lot to me. She's been a really wonderful role model and mentor. I would like to thank my PhD advisor, Richard Stanley, whose mathematics is beautiful. And I think I've really just been able to see the beauty of mathematics through his eyes. Most importantly, I would like to thank my wonderful students in San Francisco, in Colombia. They have been my teachers. Their diverse, critical, generous perspectives have just completely transformed my worldview and my understanding of what it is possible to do as a math educator. So I am tremendously thankful to them. I get to work with them, they keep my spirit young, and they keep my heart full. Muchísimas gracias.